You are listening to 15 Minutes, the show with Osiris Munir, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, kindreds out there, what's happening? It's Thursday. It's my birthday today for all of you out there that know me and love me. Mwah, mwah, mwah. Thank you for all the hugs, kisses from afar. I mean, people show up even to say, I thought of you. You know, I remember when you were did this and did that. So proud of you. So I want to thank all of you from the bottom of my heart and those special people. You know what you mean to me. And I thank you personally. Today, let's first of all say thank you to our sponsor, Kevin Pike, Coldwell Banker. Kevin is a senior real estate and probate specialist for Coldwell. You can reach him and his wonderful knowledge at 818-571-1508. He is very knowledgeable about every aspect of real estate and would be more than happy to help you. And now let's dive into the show today. Today, I have a very special guest. But first of all, before we go into that, I want to just put a little thing out there. I watched this show called Drama Box. You have to download the app, and it turned out that it cost like $149-some after they said it was free. But what I found interesting was the little clips they were showing. They were no longer than a minute or two, I think, and each one was more enticing than the next. So they had the thing about people assuming things and they don't know really know people and know where people are coming from without talking to them. But really quickly, they had it was called The Wedding. It was a show about a woman who is mistakenly considered to be a mistress for a woman who's about to get married. She's on her way to visit her brother and attend the wedding. The bride-to-be mistakes her for a whore, is what she called the woman. And it ended up, they really mistreated this girl. I mean, killed the baby. I mean, kicked her in the stomach. All behind an assumption that her mother saw the woman getting off of a plane and her future son-in-law embracing the woman because his sister was the only family he had. And everyone knew how special his sister was to him. He even explicitly said to the fiance to be that his sister was special to him and treat her with the utmost dignity. And it got really weird, all in the setting of very wealthy people in very wealthy setting and so-called they are knowledgeable and intelligent. And in my opinion, they had no knowledge whatsoever. It was like really good, but it cost $149. So if anybody out there sees the rest of it, let me know what happened. Anyway, today our guest, on a more serious note, author, conservationist, Eduardo Gonçalves, has been a writer for British politicians, journalist for the BBC. He ran a government department for the Middle East. He just told me he was an intern on the Hill up there, the Capitol Hill. He's supported by celebrities worldwide for his undying, remarkable conservation of wildlife. He has recently written a trilogy of books. I love the titles, and I think you will too. First one, Shoot One Lion, Get One Free. Second one, 20 Elephants in 75 Cents. And third, which my favorite, Mainlining on Heroin, Without the E. So I welcome onto our set, and he'll tell you the rest. Eduardo, hey, Eduardo Gonçalves. Hi.
Hey, that is quite some intro. I hope I managed to live up to expectations after all that. Wow.
Wow, that's okay. I wanted people to really know how, I know you're humble, but I want people to know the kind of things that are going on out in this world while we're paying attention to things that don't really matter, in my opinion. You know, I'm not saying they don't matter. Let me take that back. But I'm saying our focus should have a broader spectrum of that there are people actually physically out here in the world doing things that are remarkable and beyond what they've been called on this earth to do. So let's talk about your books. I want to hear about the one, Shoot One Lion and Get One Free. Now, come on. What is that about?
Okay. What is that about? So, the background is 10 years ago, almost exactly 10 years ago, this American dentist from Minnesota, Walter Palmer, he shot a lion called Cecil. And it was all over the news. And people were horrified. People thought this kind of thing had died out years ago. And I kept on asking myself, but also being asked by people, why do people do things like this? What goes on in their minds? What drives them to kill a beautiful, majestic, innocent, defenseless animal just for fun and photos and a souvenir to put in their living room? So I decided to try and answer the question. And so I went undercover. I joined the hunting industry. I became a trophy hunter, except I didn't shoot any, pretended to. So I became, I never shot anything in my life, but I pretended I was one of them, assumed identity. And I contacted the CEOs of companies that organize these hunting holidays. So you can literally go online and buy an elephant to shoot, a lion to shoot, a cheetah to shoot. Yeah, it is as easy as anything. I mean, there's websites. There's one website, you know, like Amazon. You can go on there. You can buy a book, a T-shirt, whatever. There's a website called bookyourhunt.com. It's exactly the same, except you can buy an animal to shoot online with a credit card, and boom, literally, you're off.
And it's legal to do this?
It is completely legal. And you can buy, I mean, name it. You can buy a lion to shoot that's been hand reared in a in an enclosure in South Africa, or you can go and shoot a zebra in Texas. You can shoot a kangaroo in Texas.
It's a zebra.
yeah. I mean, you can shoot a giraffe. You can shoot a monkey. And these things, I mean, it's like the Wild West. So I was being offered holidays to shoot animals. I was being offered a holiday to shoot a polar bear, a cheetah, a leopard, an elephant. And so that's why I wrote the book, Shoot One Lion, Get One Free, because that was literally one of the offers on the market. Okay? You can shoot two lions and we'll give one of them free. It's like a deal at Costco or Walmart, right? You get two bottles of wine for the price of one. Okay, two lions for the price of one. How about that? And so it tells the story of all of these companies. And I spoke to their CEOs. And then I asked them to give me the contact details of some of their customers who would give a great review. And they gave me the contact details. I got in touch with the hunters themselves. And they told me all about how much fun it was. And they sent me photos of themselves. And one woman, in fact, she sent this video that she had made. So she had this professional videographer. And it's all really staged and Hollywood-like. And at one point, she's kind of staring wistfully into the distance and the wind is blowing her hair. And this is her, as she's just shot an animal and she's thinking about this amazing thing that she's done. And it's not amazing. It's evil. And I wanted to talk, because the problem is when we remember the story of Cecil, we think this was a one-off. This is one guy, one nut, who decided to go and shoot a lion. And it's not. It is a huge industry. Let me give you just one statistic. Since Cecil was killed in 2015, trophy hunters have shot another 10,000 lions for sport, for selfies, for souvenirs. Every year, trophy hunters are, thanks to these companies, these businesses, they're shooting tens of thousands of animals, many of them at risk of extinction. It's like the Wild West out there. And that's what Shoot One Lion, Get One Free is all about.
Oh, my gosh. Well, the thing I find interesting, I mean, I'm an animal. I'm an energy lover. So I love animals, people, frogs, I get, nervous. I have to step on a bug, but, you are a bug. But, the thing is, but it's like, oh, my gosh, it's so sad to hear that. Now, well, how did you get away with not shooting? And I mean, because you're standing there with other people, or are you off to yourself roaming around in the forest somewhere? What's the setting like to do that?
I can't give away all of my trade secrets. I wasn't working alone. I'll say that. There's a guy who I've worked with before who I can't identify.
Yes.
For obvious reasons. And he did a lot of the heavy lifting. So, when it came to, flying to the estates where these hunts go on, I mean, he and I worked a few years ago. We actually broke up a dogfighting crime syndicate. It was Europe's largest one. So these were really bad criminals. They were involved in gun running, drug smuggling, people trafficking, and they were also breeding, pit bulls for and then trading them around the world and setting up these big fights of dogs for $50,000 a shot, okay? Evil, evil, evil people. And we managed to infiltrate and break up this gang. About 100 dogs were rescued and thankfully are free, and a bunch of guys got arrested. I mean, this guy I work with, I mean, he's got nerves of steel. So anyway, we worked together on this. And like I said, we went into the homes of people who had 500 bodies and heads of animals. One guy had a polar bear head and skin on the floor.
We went
into the workshops of the taxidermists that they use. So, you know, we got inside the industry and to really see what it's like so that we can tell people what it's like. And it's not, you know, the image that maybe people think of when we think about Cecil, this one guy, this one line. This is a major, major industry. And you can buy almost any animal you want to shoot. It's there.
Most people don't even know that exists. And this is the 10th anniversary of this shooting. Am I correct?
Exactly. It's going to be the 10th anniversary on the 1st and the 2nd of July. Why do I say the 1st and 2nd?
It's coming up. Yeah. Coming up very quickly.
He was shot twice. So this bow hunter, he decided he wanted to shoot Cecil with a bow. Why? Because he could get a special prize from Safari Club International, which is the biggest hunting industry group. So they give you special prizes for shooting big game animals with what they call novel weapons. So that's things like bow and arrow, crossbow, revolvers. So they give you a prize, for example, you want to shoot like a rhino with a revolver. They look up to that. They've got a record book where they keep, the records of the biggest animals ever shot by trophy hunters. It's like a competition. And you've got categories in there, for example, people who've shot hippopotamuses with an air gun. I mean, incredibly difficult to shoot a hippopotamus. You know, because these animals have got really thick skins. But let me tell you just briefly what the big thing that I found when I discovered this really dark world.
Tell. Is
these guys they get a real rush from it. An adrenaline rush is from the thrill of the kill. And it's so powerful that they become addicted to it. Mm. They become absolutely addicted. Just a couple of things that these guys said to me. So this guy, in fact, he used to work for Vladimir Putin. He's sitting in his trophy room near Moscow. And he says, I'm looking at the animals. Just looking at them, the adrenaline starts coursing through my blood. Right. Another one, he calls the moment of the kill of this bear. He says, this was the most emotional moment of my life. There's a guy that's in one of my books. He's shot 5,000 elephants and a whole load more animals. And he talks about the exhilaration of shooting elephants. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. These people, literally, they are sick, and they're killing animals by the thousands.
Now, you also, before I forget, you guys out there, his books are all the forewords by Priscilla Presley, Jane Goodall, and Shulman. So they are the best cream of the cream, and these people support it makes me feel better about Hollywood instead of hearing all the dark side of Hollywood. Everybody wants to jump on the band because it's dark, you know. But on the brighter side of Hollywood, there are those that support life. Life of animals, life of people. What's to say people can't go and start shooting people like that? Oh, yeah, let's get a website and we'll pay people to just gun down somebody just for the thrill of it, you know. I mean, where are the protective laws and all these things? If they can do it to an animal, what prevents them from doing it to regular people?
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that. The FBI has been doing research on this, about the link between animal cruelty and violent crime towards people. In fact, there have been case studies of people who are both serial killers of people and serial killers of animals. So there's one case in New York some years ago, a guy who was a trophy hunter, but he would also kidnap women in the same way. He'd strip them naked, put them in the trunk of his car, drive out into the forest in the middle of the night. Okay. And then he'd open out the trunk, get the woman out, untie and say, right, run, and give her like a few minutes start.
Shoot her in the back.
Yeah. And then he'd stalk her down like he would an animal. And, a lot of serial killers, they would literally take trophies of their victims, ears or whatever, even some trinkets, And it was
much like Silence of the Lambs, like Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah.
That's what Silence of the Lambs is about. I found it an intriguing movie. To be honest with you, I love those kind of movies where they have, because I like to understand what the hell is going on in someone's mind to be doing all this kind of stuff on a regular day. I wake up in the morning, I'm thinking about how to shoot somebody or how to go out. You have to be at a certain level of, I say your life condition has to be in a certain state, no matter, and your spirit, no matter what your financial pictures may dictate. I would say the essence of the person is rather low. It's rather low.
I completely agree.
You have no regard for life.
Well, these people not only get a kick from the kill, they also seem to get pleasure from the harm and injuries they cause as well. And they just give you three lion hunters, what they said. So the first guy, he was actually president of Safari Club International. And he says, the lion's head snaps backward and explodes with smoke from my bullet. There's an Australian guy who shot a lion. He said, I shot it through the left eye, blowing out the back of the skull. And then another one says, the arrow entered beneath the lioness's chin and took out her heart. And you kind of have to hear the context in which it's said, because these aren't regretful confessions. These guys are celebrating the fact that they did this. You know, this makes them feel great and powerful and strong and full of energy. And it's the adrenaline rush. And this is great as far as they're concerned. Now, you or I, and I think 99% of humanity would look at that and say, hey, that is really sick. I mean, that is really worrying. That these guys, I actually started my career in law enforcement, and I did a lot of research into the links between different kinds of crime. And I know quite a lot of psychologists still, and I know there's actually one guy that I've done some work with. He's one of Britain's leading psychologists, and he's interviewed all sorts of really interesting groups of people. I mean, bad people. You know, he's interviewed terrorists, and he's studied trophy hunters and other groups. And we were speaking at an event, and he got up and he said, you know what? I've just realized something. The people that scared me the most of all the people that I've met wasn't the terrorists. It was the trophy hunters. They were the ones most devoid of humanity, the ones who made up the most excuses, the ones who had complete detachment from humanity, from any kind of moral code. These guys, they were the ones who frightened me the most.
You brave soul. I need to, you know, that's why I asked you, what planet are you from? I mean, I know you couldn't be a regular earthling. You must be one of the seedlings or something they planted down here to help us move forward. Although, you know, we get stuck sometimes. But let's talk a little bit about the second book, or, you know, 20 elephants for 75 cents. Why 75 cents and not $1.25?
So it's 25 elephants in 75 minutes. And this
I thought it was 75 cents. It's 70, you are 75 minutes.
It's 20 elephants.
Why couldn't it be a
guy who boasted that amongst his many accomplishments, he'd managed to shoot 20 elephants in the space of just an hour and a quarter. And this guy, he's killed over 4,000 animals that I've been able to confirm. And that includes 1,300 elephants, 340 lions, I mean, hundreds of other animals like leopards and rhinos. He's even shot a couple of gorillas. Okay. But this guy, this gives you an example of just how self-deluded they are. He says, but I only hunt in moderation. He insists, yeah, I do all of these things, but I only hunt in moderation. And he wasn't the worst guy. You know, there was another guy who, I mean, he'd shot so many animals, he'd lost count. But he said, oh, it's in the thousands. I've shot thousands of animals. And then there was another guy who'd shot 5,000 elephants, as well as lots more animals. I mean, and that's the thing, you know, there are these people, they're not just shooting, it's not like shooting one lion, like we get the impression from the whole Cecil thing. These guys are serial killers. Definitely. And they're encouraged to do this by the trophy hunting industry, who plies them with awards that encourage them to kill more and more and more animals. There's a prize that Safari Club International gives. It's called the Hunting Achievement Award. And it's got like these levels. It's like a computer game or a console game where, you know, you're shooting aliens or the bad guys. And you've got to shoot more bad guys to get onto the next level and so on and so forth. Oh, they do that with animals. Mm-hmm. So with the Hunting Achievement Award, to get the copper prize, you've got to shoot 17 different animals. And then you go up. So anyway, you get up towards the top. So gold, you've got to shoot 100 animals. Diamond, which is the top one, you've got to shoot animals from 125 different species. It's not even 125 animals. It's 125 different species. But the biggest prize they give you, and you've got to shoot something, there's different routes to it, but broadly, you've got to shoot about 530 animals for this. Mm-hmm. Now, get this, they call this the World Conservation and Hunting Award. Mm-mm. World Conservation. And so shooting over 500 animals, apparently, that's conservation. In a world where the world's wildlife is in such trouble. I used to work for the World Wildlife Fund, okay? One of the things that my team was involved in was producing something called the Living Planet Report. Every 2 years, it shows how many, what the populations of wildlife are like. One that the World Wildlife produced last year, it said in the 1970s, the population of wildlife has crashed by 70%. In just 50 years, wildlife numbers as a whole, crashed by 70%. And when it comes to the animals that trophy hunters are shooting, some of them, it's even worse. In the 1970s, there were 200,000 lions. Mm. Today, we'd be lucky if there's 20,000. That's a 90%. It's 90%. And yet, it's still legal to go and shoot them just for fun.
Where is the protection? Aren't there laws embedded within those laws that protect those kinds of situations? Or where are the protective laws?
You'd think there would be, wouldn't you? But here's the thing. So there's an international law called CITES, the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species. That was set up to stop trade, all forms of activity, economic activity involving animals, to stop them going extinct. So you're not allowed. So that's why poaching, for example, is illegal. Okay, or killing animals for their ivory. But there's just one little problem with that law, and that is that trophy hunters are exempted from it. The crazy reason is that trophy hunting supposedly isn't a commercial activity. So it's not like you're shooting an elephant to go and sell it. But of course, it is a commercial activity because you've just got to pay probably $100,000 to somebody to go and shoot that elephant. And then you're paying the taxidermist, you're paying the shipping costs. You know, you're spending a lot of money. And so, of course, it's a commercial activity. And, of course, the wildlife traffickers, the poachers, they've used this loophole in the law. So there's an example that I talk about in one of my books. So there's a guy who runs a crime syndicate in Thailand. And he sees this loophole and thinks, hey, this is a good opportunity. So he goes to Vietnam. He hires these peasants and prostitutes and pays for them to get on a plane to South Africa. And they just turn up in T-shirts and jeans and sneakers. They don't know what they're doing. But anyway, they're told to pretend to be trophy hunters. They go to this hunting estate and they don't even know how to hold a rifle. So they have to get a hunting guy to actually shoot the rhino. And then the peasant, the prostitute, whatever, they take the horn of the rhino back with them, give it to the guy who then sells it into the Chinese black market for traditional Chinese medicines and aphrodisiacs and all of that.
Because it's ivory, right?
It's ivory. Exactly. And so the hundreds of millions of dollars worth of rhino horn has been trafficked under this legal trophy hunting loophole. And you look at the records, and I'm one of these nerds who's always looking at the official records. So there are supposedly hunting trophies of the gallbladders of bears. So bears are supposedly being shot for their gallbladders as hunting trophies. Where the hell are you going to hang that up in your living room? Above the fireplace? A gallbladder? No, what it is they get the gallbladder in order to extract the bile.
It's not funny, but
it's sick, absolutely.
It's sick. And the way that people say, this is why I can't get with things. This is why I have to follow a certain stream of thinking. And people that think in certain kinds of ways and their humanity is forthcoming, because it just doesn't make common sense, some of the things we allow ourselves to participate in. All for the sake, because we're human and we have free will. Oh, I've got free will, so I'm just going to use my most lamest part of my brain to go out and shoot an elephant or, you know, kill all these thousands of rhinos for something that you're not going to live long enough to even eat half of the money that you spent or whatever you're doing, and you're going to be top soil one day. It makes no sense at all. It's mind-boggling to me. I don't know how you've done it.
I'll tell you one thing. I have this really old laptop that I use. It's really old and it's big and chunky. It's the only one that survives my hammering on the keyboard, because sometimes I'm writing this stuff and I'm getting so angry and I'm like hitting. You know, there's a few times this laptop has come within seconds of being thrown out of the window because I get so mad at some of the things that I see, or when I'm listening to transcripts of conversations or whatever it is. And it makes me, because this is, we're living in the age of madness. This is the
crazy
insanity. We are knowingly pushing creatures to the brink of extinction, and we know how to stop it. And we're knowingly inflicting cruelty and harm on animals just because a tiny handful of people have designated the right to themselves that it's fun. And, you know, we've got to do it.
Well, we're moving into an age, I'm told, that is an age of more humanitarianism. So more and more people are waking up to that, these things, because I had never heard of this, because you know why? I don't have a gazillion dollars to go out and do trophy hunting or find people to do trophy hunting or whatever. So most people, other than through a show like this or a platform, would find out about these things and go, what? Mm-hmm. I didn't know that was happening. I had no idea there was an Eduardo Gonzalez out there. I had no idea there were people out there trying to stop this madness. And, you know, and at the same time, there is a war going on. We are in a war. It's a war of, you know, right from wrong. Come on now. You know, right from wrong. And you're going to tell me you're going to support things. And then, you know, somewhere down the line in the scheme of the laws of life that we live, checks and balances will weigh out. And, you know, you and I have lived long enough to know those checks and balances do come round. They mm-hmm. come round. They don't play. And when they come around, I don't want to hear you whining and squeaking, you know, when somebody you love, their leg or something gets blown off because you're out there shooting at animals. And then something bad happens in your personal life. Oh, why me? Because look at what you're doing and what you believe in out there killing things. You know, you don't have the power to put life back into you. Wow. We should be ashamed that we allow these things.
Well, you kind of hit the nail on the head, because most people don't know about it. You know, it's once in a blue moon when we do hear about it, because there were the dentists and there was a lion that had got a name because he's being studied by people and so on. And, you know, you certainly don't hear or see the leaders of the industry on TV or writing op-eds in the LA Times or whatever it is, or coming on your show and saying, hey, let me tell you about this great fun thing I'm doing. It doesn't happen. They work very hard to stay away from the limelight. But, you know, there are people trying to do the right thing, even in Congress. There's members of Congress who have been trying to, you know, Raul Grijalva for years has been trying to act on this, but he's not alone. There's another act that's on the floor of the House of Representatives at the moment. And, you know, we've got to tell our elected representatives what we think. And we've got to tell them that our vote depends on what they do or don't do about these issues, because this is literally life or death. This is the survival of life on Earth. And we've got to tell these people, you know what? You are there to represent me. I pay your salary from my taxes to represent me, because I'm too busy doing a job or raising a family. It's like, you know, I don't know how to do plumbing, so I buy a plumber in to come and do my plumbing at home. So you're doing my representing, okay? Mm-hmm. You are working for me, and I expect you to do a good job and to do as I want you to do. Otherwise, you're fired.
Why are you there?
You're getting
fired. Why are you there? Yeah, the thing is that what I find interesting is that, and I am a big sci-fi watcher, huge, because sci-fi lets people know what the future, where we're going. Everything I saw 30, 40 years ago, it's already happening now. So I'm telling you, sci-fi is always ahead. But the thing is that I was watching something, and with sci-fi, what if we posed a question? Let's just say mankind, like in most of Rod Serling's Twilight Zone movies, where he makes mankind the little thing, and then he has these bigger things come and devour upon mankind. So I wonder if we had to really sit inside of ourselves and we had to be the scooter in the, you know, in the big wild things, like the little mouse that goes around in the the monster that goes around in the basket around and around, a little hamster. If we had to do the same thing, how would it make us feel? Let's just say somebody decided to go ape shit on mankind. Say, look, I don't like the fact that mankind can run out, and I'm saying as a society, not just men, you know, can run out and just at will, because I feel like at that day I'm upset, or I just feel like getting my jollies off and I'm just going to kill an animal or two. I'm going to shoot a person or two. Let's just say back in the day, we're going to shoot a black person or two, or a Native American or two, or a, you know, because this is what we're, this is what you're telling me, that we have these kind of mindsets still, that, well, it's against the law to really shoot people. We can't, we can do it, but we got to do it undercover. But it's a little easier on us legally if we just shoot an animal and get off that way. Come on, Eduardo.
Hey, listen, I reckon that if aliens were to visit us and look at what we are doing, they would say, these guys are crazy. Let's get out of here. Let's not mess with these guys. I mean, these people are beyond salvation. But I also have some hope that attitudes are changing. And I got some positive evidence of this. So in the US, even a country where, you know, gun ownership and hunting is kind of a bigger part of the culture than it is maybe in other parts of the world, 80 to 90% of people in the US disapprove of trophy hunting of big game animals. They say they believe it. And even people who, for example, maybe hunt a deer and they have the venison and they eat it, whatever, but they draw the line when it comes to shooting lions and elephants. So there is some recognition that, you know, this is just plain wrong. And society changes, as we know, over time. And the numbers of animals that trophy hunters are shooting is going down. It's not just the pandemic. If you look at the trend between now and 10 years ago, American trophy hunters are shooting half as many animals as they did just a decade ago.
Well, good.
That's a level that's replicated pretty much around the world. So there are signs of hope. But yeah. So, you know, trophy hunting is a dying industry. As well as being a killing industry, it's a dying industry. But, you know, our job on this earth is to help push it over the cliff as fast as possible. Because, you know, some of these wildlife species, they don't have long left. There's 6,500 cheetahs left on this planet. That's it. That's 6,500. There's 3,000 black rhinos. And once you get down to those kind of numbers, there can be a sudden collapse. I saw this myself about 30 years ago, with a species called the Iberian lynx, which you've probably never heard of. It's the most endangered big cat in the world. It only lives in Portugal and Spain. And numbers had been sort of around about 1,200, then maybe 600. And then suddenly there were 90, just 90 animals left, of which only 28 were breeding age females. And there was none in captivity, so you couldn't start a breeding program. Wow. We nearly lost the first big cat on planet Earth since the saber-toothed tiger disappeared in prehistoric times. We came that close to it, 25 years to it. Fortunately, we managed to persuade the authorities to get up off their asses, right? And they started, getting the runts of litters in the wild that wouldn't survive in the wild. They would bring them into a breeding center and nurture them. And then they were the founders of this breeding program. Anyway, fast forward to 20 years ahead, there's now 2,000 Iberian lynxes spread across the... And they're breeding in the wild again.
It's okay, actually good.
An untold conservation success story. So these things are possible, but the warning signs are there. If we let populations shrink, then suddenly you have implosions and whole populations can disappear. And the problem with trophy hunting is not just the numbers of animals. It's the fact that they're shooting the biggest, the best, the strongest, the fittest animals.
Yes.
They're the most impressive ones. So the lion, for example, it's lost 15% of its gene pool in the last century because all the big animals are being shot out. The industry records of Safari Club International, which I was able to access as a member of the hunting group, I could see that the measurements of lions are getting smaller. Lions are literally getting smaller as a species. Yes. because we're losing the big genes. And you get to the point where you only need a small number of the remaining biggest, best animals to go, and you can't recover it, or it's very, very difficult to.
Very difficult. Eduardo, let's take a station break. Let's announce our sponsor again, Kevin Pike, Coldwell Banker, 818-571-1508. He is a probate real estate specialist in every little thing you need to know about property, inside and out. He knows it. 818-571-1508. Kevin Pike, Coldwell Banker. And now back to Eduardo Gonçalves. Hey, Eduardo. Eduardo, let's talk a little bit about, now I want you guys to know, before you go, I need to clone about five of you. And I really do need to know what planet you came from. Okay. But anyway, Eduardo, just so you know, he, after giving his son, his nine-year-old son, one of his kidneys, went on to win gold at the British Transplant Games. He started an organization, international organization, to stop trophy hunters from hunting wildlife. That's pending. And then I want to talk a little bit more about his third book, which he calls Mainlining on Heroin, and that's heroin without the E. Can you get into that? The nine-year-old son, the one kidney you went on to accomplish and become a gold winner at the British Transplant Games. I never even heard of the British Transplant Games. I didn't even know they had a transplant game.
You know, there's a World Transplant Games as well.
I did not know that.
And it's for people both who've received transplants, but also people who are donors, living donors, and obviously that's almost always kidney donors. There are some liver donors as well. I mean, gosh, where to begin? let me tell you this. As a parent, there's one thing that's the worst thing in the world, which is when you have a kid who is sick and when you can't do anything about it, and that feeling of helplessness, that's the worst feeling in the world. But I was really fortunate because I was in a position to help my son. Yes. And which parent would not jump at that? Okay. I'm not going to tell his story. It's for him to tell. But all I'll say is he spent best part of a year in a children's hospital in London, the best one. He'd had 11 emergency operations. He had every complication. Thankfully, I was fit and well. And to be a living donor, you have to go through all of these medical tests, also psychological
tests. Make sure you're healthy, yeah.
And exactly. And I was fortunate that I had nothing wrong with me, that I was a compatible donor, and he's just turned 21, and which is amazing, and I'm just so thankful that I was able to do that. He won gold at the British Transplant Games as well, by the way. It wasn't just me.
Oh,
he
did. Wow, I didn't even know that. Yeah. Wow, that's wonderful.
In different events, and it was a difficult time, but he then tried to use that in a positive way. So he decided, because when he was in hospital, he came across a whole load of kids who were in an even worse off situation as far as he saw it. So there was one girl, for example, about his age. She'd had a kidney transplant from her father. It had failed. It had been rejected. She had another kidney transplant from her mother. That failed and was rejected. Wow. So this poor little girl, she was on a dialysis machine, and she'd been on a dialysis machine for a couple of years. And it was like there was no hope, there was no spark in her. And I know that really touched him. So he decided, we need to do something. He's worse than me. So he decided to start writing to all of the politicians in Britain and saying, have you got an organ donor card? You know, these cards that you get where you basically sign up and show, you carry it around in your wallet, whatever, to show if something happens to you, you can send
the organ.
Organs being donated. He started writing to the Prime Minister and the members of the cabinet and the leaders of parties. He actually got a letter back from the Prime Minister. And so all of these members of parliament were saying, this is a really big issue. He got invited to speak in the Houses of Parliament about his experience, And basically he was saying, look, there needs to be a change in the law, because at the moment you have to opt in to be an organ donor. Why don't we have an opt-out law where you say, actually, for whatever reason, I just don't want my organs to be used. But the assumption is otherwise, you've given your consent. And that law has actually now been implemented in Britain. Anyway, so I remember, well, because he asked my help to write his speech, but it's his speech. And he, you know, addressed this room full of members of parliament, British you know, you've got to imagine these guys are all in their suit and tie and grey and whatever. He reduced a room of politicians to tears through telling his story and telling the story of this little girl and the other children that he had met. And the law changed because of that. And, you know, it's a change that has meant hundreds, maybe thousands of lives have been saved, because so many people die just because an organ is available. And these are people who could have survived if an organ had been found in time. And thankfully, more people are surviving. Fewer people are dying. Mm. And, yeah.
That's a hope. That's hopeful. Yeah, that's some light in the storm right there.
We can all make a difference, and we can all use our experiences, even if they're bad experiences, to bring a greater good.
That's right.
And you know, we've got to tap that positive energy that we've all got within ourselves and try to think, yeah, things aren't great in this world. What can I do about it?
To make it better.
Right? Because it's not up to others. You know, if we're just leaving it to others to do, nothing's going to get done. Everyone has that same attitude. And sometimes, yeah, it means you've got to be the one who sticks their head above the parapet. And sometimes that means you're going to get shot at. But you've got to try to realize that in the broader scheme of things, it's just the right thing. And so, yeah, you know, some trophy hunters, they write some marvelous things about me. They've called me to be deported on a leaky dinghy and all sorts. Anyway, it doesn't matter. They can say what they like. You know, there was a little old lady that I knew when I was a young man. She was a Quaker. Mm-hmm. She was tiny and she was quite elderly. And I won't use the exact words that she said, but she said to me one day, you know, Eduardo, you're not doing your job if you're not peeing them off. And that just stayed with me, you know. to make an omelette, you've got to crack some eggs. And that means, yeah, people will come out for you. But was it the right thing to do? You've got to look deep inside yourself. Was it the right thing to do?
We know right from wrong. We know right. There, even if you are very unconscious, there's still a nudging in every human being that's saying, you know, come on now. And then whether we think about it or let our impulsiveness or our lack of training or whatever the excuse or reason go ahead of us, and that's something. Eduardo, where can we? We're getting short on time. I wish the show were a little longer, but it's not. And I know you always have other things to do. Everybody is so busy out there doing things to make things happen in the world out there. But before we leave the thing about your 9-year-old son, you yourself, after doing all of these things, what is your condition, and are you okay? I don't have to worry about you or anything, do I?
Hey, listen, I've got stuff to do, and you know, I'm going to stick around for as long as I can. You know, I was diagnosed a few years ago with an illness that a lot of people haven't heard of. Watchers of House have probably seen it. It's something called sarcoidosis, and it affects you in different ways depending on where it lodges in the body. Mm-hmm. And in my case, it's been in my brain, my heart, my lungs and stuff. And there have been times where, yeah, I've been bedridden. I've been in a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. But not every day is like that. And there's always something positive. And you know what? One of the best things I did 2 years ago, I adopted a 14-year-old Staffordshire Bull Terrier. He'd been abandoned in really horrible circumstances. He was deaf. The people, his owners, they'd moved house. Mm-hmm. They moved out of their apartment and they just left him there. And he went for 10 days without any food or water. Mm. And he was frightened. He was starving. He nearly died from starvation. Eventually, the authorities, they broke the door down. They rescued him. And Anyway, I took him in, and he has been a blessing. He's been the most gentle, beautiful, friendly, positive creature. And, he actually passed a few weeks away. But after his 16th birthday, we held a big party in his favorite woodlands. And we had balloons and his chariot. And we had his favorite dinner and his cake and all the rest of it. And,
that's lovely.
The love of a dog is like...
I know. I'm a dog owner. I totally get it. My dog's still young, but I think about, oh, my gosh. You know, and I just try to enjoy every moment. But listen, we need to go and we need to tell everybody where we can find more about you and your projects. They are all ongoing and what you do, how we can get involved and help stop these people, stop these organizations from doing these sorts of things. Go.
So... our website is bantrophyhunting.org. Pretty simple. That's what we're about. We're about banning trophy hunting. So bantrophyhunting.org, that's where you can find out about us, where you can find out about me, and you'll hopefully be able to get the books on there as well. They are actually already available on Amazon.
Yes, they
are. If you search for me, you're going to find these books, plus there's a few others that I've written about this in the past, including my most recent book, which was called Saving Sally, where we did this heart-stopping undercover operation to save a tiger cub that was about to be shot by a trophy hunter. And we actually managed to smuggle it away and into a secret sanctuary. And she's now living free. And she's got a friend, another rescue tiger. And so my books are on Amazon, so you can
search. We'll have to do a follow-up on you and have you back on so you can talk some more about that, because I'm really, this is kind of like things that I'm into personally. So, I love this kind of subject. By the way, don't forget, let's thank our wonderful LA Talk Radio owner, Sam Hassan. Thank you, Sam, for letting us come on and shine every week and do our thing. Also, don't forget about me. I love you. I love for who you are. People like Eduardo, you have no idea how this makes my heart feel that there are people out there doing good, positive things and making positive causes to get some positive effects. And also, I like you because of who you are and how you stand strong and stay the same people over and over, no matter what knocks you down. You lift yourself up and you keep moving forward, and that's what it's all about. Don't forget about my YouTube channel, 15 Minutes to Show, LA Talk Radio. We need the numbers. If you don't want the numbers, I love what I do and I love the people we have on. You're bad that you miss out on these people. You know, it's not the shallow part of Hollywood, but the deeper, more entrenching things that are actually very humanistic that people behind the scenes in Hollywood are doing all the time, and you just don't hear about them. So don't forget, next time, we'll see you next week. Don't forget to smile. It works wonders. And Eduardo, thank you for coming on today. You've been amazing, and I love you for all that you do. Just know you have a heart out here. Love you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's been a real genuine pleasure talking with you and meeting you. And thank you. Right. Thank you for inviting
me. Thank you. And come back. Don't be a stranger. Okay.
Anytime. I would love to come and talk with you again.
I would love that. All right. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye. See you next week. Bye-bye.
You are listening to 15 Minutes, the show with Osiris Munir, only on LA Talk Radio.